Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. Boy, I really enjoy when we do that. I mean, you know, I realize it's just speaking our names, but we do it together. And, you know, it's a positive thing, and we didn't screw it up.
We're in concert, is that what you're saying? Jeff and Jake McClure, in concert.
In...
Every weekend.
Inconsequential?
Yeah, that too. That too, definitely that too.
Well, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, which is a radio program.
Ta-da!
Ta-da!
And I love our disclosures. We tell them exactly what they know already.
Isn't that what disclosures are supposed to do?
I suppose. We're not only a radio...
Close cover before striking.
Right. Unauthorized personnel only...
Read the prospectus carefully prior to investing. Read and understand the prospectus prior to investing, and we'll be out of business. That's
yes.
In between the lines.
Right.
If you put the, you know, you put a little
it's true, though.
Lemon juice on it or something in there, it would say they're right between the lines, and we will be out of business if you do.
For the protection of the public, though, definitely important to read the prospectuses. That's one of the things that... It's very difficult to do, but if you're going to be trusting your entire life savings to something, it's probably a good idea to do it, unless you find a fiduciary that's willing to do it for you.
If you're capable of reading and understanding the prospectus prior to investing,
mm-hmm.
You probably ought to be in business.
That's probably true.
Doing it. Anyway, welcome to the Personal Wealth Coach. Personal Wealth Coach, in addition, as we have sort of suggested, to being a radio program, which it is, because if you're listening to it on your radio, that's kind of a giveaway.
That was the most confusing sentence I think I've ever heard.
I love it. I've been writing regulatory disclosures.
All week. You're right. Okay. Do you want me to take over this?
No. Well, I need to give the full disclosure here. The Personal Wealth Coach is a regulatory disclosure writing firm that occasionally manages money for its clients. That's what the last three weeks, something like that, I have felt like we are a regulatory disclosure writing firm
yes.
that occasionally does something for its clients. Oh, okay. We are, in fact, an investment advisory firm registered with actually a pretty good regulatory organization called the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Depends on who you ask about the probably pretty good thing.
I think it's a pretty good one, yeah.
See, that's who we're asking. If we're asking you, then yes, that's probably true. But I'm sure there are some people.
Who was it that would not think that they were a pretty good regulatory organization?
Quite a few members of Congress that are rather upset with their performance during the recession.
I understand why.
According to who's saying it.
These are the same members of Congress that said, no, you don't need that many people to go out and look at firms with all this education.
I didn't say,
let's cut their pay.
Yeah, I didn't say they were right.
Oh, okay.
Just said that there are some people that think that they should be blamed rather than the people that cut the pay of all the people that were supposed to be.
FINRA thinks they should be blamed.
Oh, yeah. FINRA wants to take over.
Because they just want to make a little money. Anyway, they haven't had a lot of power. Anyway, this is truly internal geeky stuff that has nothing to do probably
and
with those who are listening.
We still haven't finished the disclosure.
And we are, in fact, Jake, who's the guy sitting over there in the plaid, and Jeff, who's the guy talking right now and who's wearing plain, as always, so you should be able to tell us apart, we are principals and advising members of the Personal Wealth Coach, and we give investment advice to people. And that's what we normally do for a living when we're not writing regulatory disclosures. You know, that's what we do in addition to the radio show. And it's not a show.
Nope. You see, this is very technical.
Well, that would be false and misleading statements to say it's a show because we're not showing it.
We could show each other, I suppose. We could say, see, this is my nose.
But it's more
showing.
Like, you're right. It's more like a radio tell.
It's only half of the show and tell.
And if we're only delivering half of it, we need to fully disclose that.
Yeah. If you would like to call us while we're on the air here.
On the air?
And actually speak to us and remove the...
Silliness,
although you probably won't remove it completely. You may call us locally at...
773-1400. Do you like the way I said that?
I
773-1400.
I'm very glad you don't speak like that regularly. If you did, it would be
I know alarm. People who do.
Yes. The other number, toll-free, is 1-866-597-1400. And now we have to figure out what we're going to talk
who's
about.
Who's the guy that does talk like that all the time, the guy in the galactic?
Intergalactic nemesis?
Yeah, the guy who is the hero-looking sort of guy. Doesn't he always talk like this?
But he's a fig tree in our amalgamation. He does not actually exist.
Well, he's a hero.
And heroes all
he's a
have...
a nationally
these...
known
who was
hero.
That masked man? There you
oh,
go.
Oh, well, there's the voice the... again, yes. See? And back in the good old days that everybody yearns for.
Little Orphan Annie, will she survive? That was more like the
out of the
movie
glow
announcer.
Of the western sky comes Sky King. That was one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Back in the black and white days, before there was color.
I've read about that, and I've seen documentary evidence that it existed, but mm-hmm. It's hard for me to understand exactly where the color came in. What was the point?
Well, the point was it really was cool looking, and if you're really, really rich, wealthy, had oodles and gobs of money and nothing better to do with it, then you could buy a color television. I remember seeing my first one. I may have told you about this. And my mother took me over to these people's house, and they were in St. Louis, and they were very, very wealthy. And they had, like, a private swimming pool in their backyard. Woo.
Whoa.
And they had a television. Well, we had a television, too, but it was nothing like their television. Their television was bigger and better than ours. And I thought that was really cool until they set me down in front of it, and I watched for a minute, and the only color TV show came on. They bought the television set to watch one show. Do you remember, you know what it was?
I don't.
Walt Disney's The Wonderful World of Color.
Oh.
That's what the name of the show was. Wonderful. And this NBC Peacock showed up. The NBC Peacock up until that time had been varying shades of gray. And right in front of my eyes, suddenly the NBC Peacock had color.
Color.
Whoa!
This is like being Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz.
You got it. Then I saw that too. But yeah, it really was. I mean, it was just, I was just floored. And so they left me in there watching the show, and they all went outside to do whatever adult people do when they go outside and leave kids to watch TV. And I went running out in the middle of the show, and I said, something's wrong with your TV. And they said, what? And I said, commercials came on, and they're not in color. Well, that's just the way they are. The commercials are not in color and the rest of it is? Yeah. Why? I don't know. For second grade or no, something like that. And I guess, you know, it was the second grade. So I was whopping 8 years old or there, about seven mm-hmm. or 8 years old.
I remember our first color TV.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
The little?
Yeah, the little, it was like a 12-inch screen and...
And a continuous dial. Didn't even click.
Right. It was just a dial that kind of used...
Which later we could use to listen to cell phones.
Yes. Then the cell phones came on. We just flipped through the channels until... And it didn't click again. It was... You could go between channels. So we were listening to cell phone people talking on our television.
It was a Curtis Mathis television, and it had a lifetime guarantee.
Wow.
And I learned something about lifetime
guarantees.
We should
go to Curtis Mathis. And
well, they're out of business.
Oh, the lifetime. Whose lifetime? We didn't ask that part.
Yeah,
see,
when
it was
broke,
Curtis Mathis's
when
lifetime.
When it finally stopped working, which was probably 20 years after we bought it.
It was more than
I
that.
I said, hey, we got a lifetime guarantee on this. And I tried to go, and I went back to the place where we bought it, which, by the way, was still in business.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Modern TV and Appliance in
Killeen.
Yeah. And they said, sorry, that guarantee was by Curtis Mathis. I said, so? And they said, well, Curtis Mathis doesn't exist anymore. Oh. So much for a lifetime guarantee.
Right.
Whose lifetime was the question? Guarantees that got in trouble.
The other question I have is I wonder if cats talk to each other now and talk about the good old days when they could stand on or sit on top of the television and have everyone in the room be looking at them. And now the cats that try that fall down. There's nothing to stand on.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really narrow, and they could probably walk
tight
across
rope
it,
parking.
But it would be...
So Even though you listeners out there were probably thinking what we were talking about had nothing to do with economics, we are coming to it gradually.
Well, remember that it's economics, which means it has echo at the base word.
So we have to say it a lot of times.
Ricocheting back and forth. Did anything important or significant happen last week?
I think so.
Really?
Yes. We had a Wednesday last week.
Good.
Thought that was important and significant.
Okay.
But I also we also had a revision, the second revision to the first, it's not even the first quarter, the fourth quarter's GDP. Did you see that go by?
Second revision to the fourth quarter GDP. I missed
well,
that.
Well, okay, the first time they came out and they said the economy retracted by 0.1%. This
right.
was the original
And then in the last revision, which I thought was the final revision.
Well, no, not for quite some time.
Okay.
Okay, the
they
last
said it was
revision.
Up 0.1%.
Right. Well, now they're saying it was up 0.4%.
Whoa.
Yes. So the headline was anemic growth for fourth quarter, as if that wasn't better than the really anemic growth or the anemic shrinking of prior reports. But yes, it is now. We have a third time verification that tells us that we can't be sure of anything because they keep changing their minds.
Hmm.
But
anemic growth as opposed to anemic shrinkage?
Right.
What's the opposite of growth?
Negative growth in the economic world. We have growth and negative growth because it's easier to say than shrink. No, it isn't. Shrink is a lot easier because it sounds smarter to say negative growth.
Well, I guess there's a lot of truth in that.
What else happened this week? Let's see. The S&P 500
didn't do anything significant, did it?
I think it broke the record, didn't it? Didn't it go above where it was before?
Well, I love the headline in the Trader. Dreamy quarter ends with S&P at record high.
Oh, dreamy quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a teen blog.
And when the Dow Jones Industrial Average, of course, made its all-time record high recently, was headlines. When the S&P did it, everybody go, oh, well.
Oh, yeah, no big deal.
But this is the point among the prognosticators who predicate over the
profuse
tea leaves on Wall Street. In order for a record high to be held historically, it must be confirmed by a second major index. Well, actually, what happened, the NASDAQ already had hit a didn't. No, the NASDAQ didn't.
That's amazing.
Right. The NASDAQ has not hit a record high.
It won't for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, which, by the way, is a strong indication that we've not gone crazy again.
Well, we've just had two indexes hit it.
Mm-hmm. But when the NASDAQ hits a record high, it historically...
Uh-huh. It's right before a crash.
Right before everything else falls.
Yes, because the NASDAQ should be... It shouldn't need to get back up to where it was in the year 2000 for quite some time, as it was about 30 times above the price that it should have been at the time. It's about half of what it was. It's had enough time to work some earnings up. I think it's almost ready in the next 5 or 6 years to go back to what it was, but we'll give it some time.
Well, the S&P 500 closed, by the way, its previous high was 1565. Closed out the week at 1569.19.
Oh, that's just so good. Wait a minute.
That's cool.
How many points is that? 1569?
1,569.19, which means that over the last 52 weeks, it's up 11.82%. But this is the better part of it. Year to date, it's up 10% in the first quarter.
3 months.
So of its 52-week rise, all but about 1.73% is from this year alone. Now, why is that significant, or is it? I think it's significant, not because of any political leaning. Now, before I say what I'm going to say, please understand there's nothing political about what I'm about to say. There is a reality about what I'm about to say, and although I suspect I will get emails from some people, one in particular who's a radio personality, who will accuse me of saying something political. Remember the great predictions and fear from last October that if President Obama was reelected, the market would crash, and all of the conservatives, believe me, I got a lot of people contacting me. The conservatives were
sequestration
saying, oh, man, the world's coming to an end.
President needed. And
if President Obama's reelected, I want out of the – and when he got reelected, people wanted to bail out of the market because the market was going to crash because a lot – now, where did you hear that from? Hey, listeners out there, think about where you heard the warning – that the market was going to crash and the economy was going to crater and all kinds of bad things were going to happen if President Obama was reelected. And I'm not even going to cite the places where I heard it.
Yeah.
I just want you to think about where you heard it, and I want you to take the time to recognize how absolutely wrong those predictions were.
Yeah, this is a key here. When people make predictions about the economy, we give them a free pass as Americans. We're like, all right, yay, we're going to either get excited or scared about the prediction based on what our emotional feelings are at the current moment. But then in 3 years, we don't bother to check back to see if it was
right. 3 years and 3 months, we don't bother to check back.
And so the next time the same people come forward with differing predictions or predictions of with great assurance coming forward and saying this is what will happen, we give them a free pass because we don't look at what they've done in the past.
This is an interesting point. Beginning in September, the stock market started down. Every index, S&P 500, Dow Jones Industrial Average. Those of you who track the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it was up around around 13,000 rather, in September. By mid-November, it had dropped considerably. Let me look at the numbers here.
There we go.
Was down around 12,000, 11,000 something. And why did it drop during that particular time frame? I mean, the economic news wasn't bad. And the reason the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped during that period, as did the S&P 500, as did the NASDAQ, as did everything else, is because the rhetoric was telling people, looks like Obama's going to win, the market's going to crash, looks like Obama's going to, oh, Obama won, the market's going to crash. And so a lot of people sold. And the massive sell-off occurred in November after the election.
What we're trying to make clear here is that politics, particularly fear over who's elected which way, unless there is a major tax in the works for the market, based on a specific election, rather than one that's amorphous and might or might not happen, the economy and the market tend to react on feelings of good news and happy things, and that's generally what the liberal side runs on. Long term, I think decisions are made for the next decades better by the conservatives, but right now, if you just look back, and this is a non-political statement, it's a piece of history. It's not how we vote at all, but it's a piece of history to allay some fears. If you look back at the market performance for Democrats versus Republicans, you'll find an amazing correlation that when the president is in office and he's a Democrat, the market tends to do better. And when it's a Republican, the market tends to do worse. When the reality is the long-term impact of those decisions may or may not be better one way or the other. I think Bill Clinton did a great thing with NAFTA. He signed it. The Republicans really wanted it. He signed it. It's done great things. I know a lot of people out there that are saying, you know, we exported all these jobs and all that. No, free trade is always better for the economy. It may not be better for an individual, but it is always better for the economy.
It's an interesting reversal going on.
Yeah.
We do have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Rick in Salado.
Hello, Rick Von Salado.
Hey, just driving around looking at the old blue bonnets.
How old are they?
I don't know. Maybe a couple of days. I don't know. Hey, could you explain to me how that quantitative easing affects the stock market, or is that a reason why the stock market
quantitative easing. I like that idea. Quantity of easing.
Yes. Sure.
Quantitative easing?
Yeah. The quantitative easing is probably having a minor role in the market.
Because a lot of people say that that's where if they stop buying or stop doing it, that's where all the market possibly could crash.
Well, the economy could possibly crash if they stop buying bonds.
Yeah.
And if the economy crashed, the stock market probably would bleed in doing that.
Bernanke is one that's actually buying. I mean, his decisions and the board's decisions are to keep buying.
Right, and that's good. I'm really glad.
And what if they stop?
Then we could go back to the 19th and early 20th century, and we could have depressions again.
Rather than giving ultimatums like that, let's explain what's going on here, because there's a massive amount of misunderstanding on quantitative easing.
Well, there's also a massive...
I need to get off the phone and listen to you.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. So what is quantitative easing? The Federal Reserve, which is just a big conglomeration of banks that the Congress decided needed to have somebody at the head to make sure that they weren't acting only in their own interest, so decided to pass the Federal Reserve Act, which would allow the president to nominate and appoint three members of the Federal Reserve Board, which had to be approved by the Senate, reviewed and approved by the Senate, and then placed in charge of these banks, because these banks on their own might do, we don't know. Thomas Jefferson was very clear that he didn't like the idea of banks making all the decisions.
You mean like Lehman Brothers making decisions?
Exactly. Or Bear Stearns or many of the others.
Merrill Lynch.
Countrywide. We can just keep going on down the road. What the result of this was is we have a Federal Reserve, which is the head of which was he was the head of the economics department at Princeton. He's not a banker. And he's the one that tells them, you must charge or cannot charge more or must charge this much on interest.
Actually, the board does it and they vote. He's just the
chairman. But there are three members appointed and then they're the heads of these different banks. But he has a great deal of power as chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And what it amounts to is very similar to a Supreme Court situation, only it's not lifetime. He's not politically motivated. He has to do what the Federal Reserve job is to do. Congress said you must first foremost protect the currency against deflation and inflation. Second, please try to dampen out all these swings in the markets. That's that's the second one. It was appointed by
Jobs.
By Congress and Jobs.
Jobs was the second one, not the market.
Well, the third one is the market. One of the Federal Reserve's jobs appointed where possible to avoid fluctuations in the market, to prevent panics and such like that. So I actually preferred it when the Federal Reserve's only job was to look directly at the buying power of the dollar to prevent inflation and deflation. This isn't on the currency exchanges out in the rest of the world. It's right here. Just prevent too much inflation, prevent too much deflation. What QE3 is doing is all three of those responsibilities. By buying up bonds, what the Federal Reserve is doing is it's going to American citizens. They are the only organization that's allowed to know who they're buying from when they buy these bonds. When you go to sell a bond, you don't know who's buying it. The Federal Reserve knows who they're buying it from. And they're only buying from U.S. citizens. So they're not buying from China, for instance. They're buying from you or me when we have long-term bonds. And that pushes a whole bunch of money into the hands of people that had those bonds. It's money they already had in the form of a bond. It was invested. They couldn't spend it. Now they have it in their hands. Well, most people that have these bonds have the ability to, you're showing me the dual mandate, and that is correct. In 1977, that is true. But if you look back on January 25th, 2012, the principles were released for, and it includes market. It says it on the second paragraph that you don't have highlighted. So if you read more about the principals. Anyway, what I was saying is they're buying the bonds from American citizens who are receiving money in spendable form. Most people that have U.S. government bonds that are American citizens immediately reinvest that. And U.S. bonds right now are not paying a lot of interest. So that does have an impact on the market. It also has an impact on spending in the economy. So money is going back in. If this had taken place 6 years ago, if the Federal Reserve had started pumping money into the economy at this rate 6 years ago, they would have caused runaway inflation. If this runaway inflation is rolling on down the mountain, in our experience, anytime the government has done this or the Federal Reserve has done this, we've had runaway inflation. So that's what the fear is. The difference here, and I'm not saying it's different this time, it has to do with if you're playing golf and the slope of the course is different than the last course you played, you still have to get the ball in the hole, but you can't use the same strokes that you did in the last one. It's still the same game. And in this case, the economy lost a lot of money. If you look at the value of your house today versus what it was in 2007, in Texas, it's not so bad. It's still less than what it was, though. In the rest of the country, it is massively less than what it was. And we were using that to produce money. We were taking home equity loans to buy a car, or home equity loans to pay off credit card debts, or home equity loans to create the stuff that we were doing in our houses or furniture or whatever. We were taking money from our houses to do that, and we can't do that anymore, which means the available amount of money to spend has shrunk. That is one of the definitions of deflation. In order to keep that from happening, the Federal Reserve has been pumping money into the economy. And you are still looking like you don't think that the Federal Reserve is supposed to dampen the swings in the market.
So well, yeah, I'd rather, Rich, that you look at this. But, yeah, what's happening in quantitative easing has an effect on the market, and I think that's very important. Quantitative easing is a nice way of saying that we're going to take, that the Federal Reserve is going to take the money that they previously took out of the economy. Now, when did they do that? Way back under Volcker, we had some really high inflation rates when Chairman Volcker was the chairman of the Federal Reserve. It's called the Volcker Fed. And he was appointed by Jimmy Carter, confirmed by the Senate, and he stepped in and did some very, very, very conservative things, which is an interesting concept because Jimmy Carter was anything but conservative, but he was wise enough. And I heard him speak one time where he said that he knew when he and Chairman Volcker, before Jimmy Carter nominated him, he sat down with him and said, here's what I want you to do if I nominate you. And he said he would do it, which is raise interest rates and destroy the runaway inflation that was endangering the economy. And President Carter, to his credit at that moment in time, said, I recognize that this will probably mean I'll be a one-term president. And believe me, that was a very, very large piece of why President Carter was a one-term president.
As well as George H.W. Bush being a one-term president because Greenspan made some decisions on the economy that were for the best of the economy long-term, but short-term, we were in a recession.
And I personally like the guy who replaced him, but still the issue was that it's very much the same thing that happened under George H.W. Bush, where Alan Greenspan raised interest rates, and in doing so put us into a mild recession, and the end result was that the The president did not get reelected. But as far as the economy is concerned, and we made this point before again and again and again, but it's really important to understand this as a participating person in a democratic society. It's really important to understand these things because there's a threat to a stability mechanism in our society. And the threat is that there's members of Congress, unfortunately, they tend to be on the conservative side. Rand Paul is currently the leading proponent of this, that basically want to do away with the Federal Reserve. Well, the Federal Reserve constitutes what really boils down to as a governor. You know, it's interesting. It's a board of governors. And it is. It's a governor on the society. When things get running too well, too fast in our society, we're headed for a wall. And it's the Federal Reserve's job to, there's a traditional saying, to take away the punch bowl when the party gets rolling really, really well. And when they see evidence that the economy is accelerating too fast, it is exceeding its capacity to produce, history indicates that at that point we will overcommit ourselves and we will go into a decline that will feed on itself and produce a recession. In the 19th century, in the first part of the 20th century, we had recessions every 10 years, almost on a schedule. Literally, in the 0 years, we had market downturns and recessions, and they actually were depressions. They were severe. Huge ones occurred. Sometimes they were off from the 0-0 years by a couple of years, but about every 10 years we had these massive depressions. And in between, we had other things that we had inflations in between. And interestingly enough, the worst inflation that the United States ever experienced was in 1918. And this is one of those things that's hard to imagine. We had 300% inflation in 1 year in the United States of America in 1918. I really want you to get your mind around this. Now, this is while the United States was on the gold standard. And it was because of the gold standard, because we'd temporarily gone off the gold standard during World War I to finance the war. We came back onto the gold standard in 1918. The price of gold jumped by a factor of 3. And then it collapsed.
And that collapse was the inflation. Now, I do have to come in here and say you are correct. There are two mandates.
Is anybody recording this?
I'm recording this.
Okay. I want this to go down in history.
The 112th Congress, which was the last one around, passed through the House a bill saying that the stability of the market was going to happen, but it didn't go through the Senate, and that's what I was thinking was going on. I thought there was more fiddling going on with the Federal Reserve than there actually has been.
I sincerely hope that one of the things I am absolutely thrilled at is that bill did not pass and be signed into law.
There were actually four bills of differing types, all giving or taking away mandates from the Federal Reserve, and that didn't happen.
The Federal Reserve cannot pay attention to the market and the money supply and employment all at the same time.
Right.
They are contradictory because in order to fix inflation, you have to accept the fact you're going to cause a market downturn.
Yeah, and this is important. This is the... Money is created at banks. This is something that most people don't realize. They think the U.S. government just prints money some and it comes out.
I think the Federal Reserve prints money.
Right. Well, the U.S. Treasury actually prints paper money when the Federal Reserve requests it to replace money that's tearing. But cash, the paper stuff that we hold, represents somewhere less than 1% of all currency out there. How much cash do you carry with you versus how much do you have in the bank versus how much you get paid by and taxes that go out? That, for instance, when you paid your taxes, I suspect that at no point did it become paper cash. And we're almost out of time for this hour. We got to play some commercials. But
you got to play lots of commercials.
Currency right now is made up mostly of electrons. It's electronic. It's sitting in banks that are electronic. It's in credit card companies that are electronic. When you spend money on a credit card, there's no paper money that transacts. It goes electron to electron.
You're kidding me.
I'm kidding.
They don't have, like, trucks that carry around dollar bills?
I think the proper statement saying is, you're my father, is that you kidded me. It's what goats do when they're kidding.
You were the kid and related to me, so you were the kidding.
You kidded me. It happened. When
anyway,
goats
I always
kid.
Thought they were just like trains of cash.
Yes, they drive around. I made a transaction at Walmart, and a truck from the bank is going to show up there later because I had a credit card.
Right.
No, that's not how it works.
That's a very interesting subject, by the way.
And when you consider that inflation is having more money than the goods are worth, and deflation is having not as much money as the goods are worth, it causes prices to decline, which may sound really great, except that if prices are declining, so will your pay be. And if your pay declines and your mortgage
your
is still... Your baby. I just made that statement, and it's pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep that. It's like stuff. It's a good one. How much is your baby?
So will your pay be? So if your pay declines and your mortgage is a 30-year rate, your mortgage didn't decline with your pay, which means that for you, your mortgage payment just went up because of deflation. Deflation is much more dangerous than inflation, and that's one of the things that people are very afraid of inflation because they remember it. They felt it in their lives. Mm-hmm. Deflation is something from the 1930s. Well, we have it right now. We're right on the edge of it. And without money being pumped back into the system from somewhere, we will have deflation.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to break for commercials. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And, man, did we ever open up a can of worms here. I mean... We could spend the rest of the 2 hours
talking about the Federal Reserve.
No, just about what money is.
Yeah,
you know?
What is money? Where does it come from?
I have a thing in my pocket.
Uh-huh.
A piece of plastic.
I'm not sure
strip,
I want to hear about this.
A little strip on the back of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is the equivalent of a $25,000 bill.
Yep. It's pretty amazing.
And the vast majority of money issued in the United States is not issued by the federal government.
Nope. It's issued by banks that are just saying
Visa,
we're going
MasterCard,
to give you a loan
Visa,
with a limit of this much. Use it however you see fit.
Pretty wild and crazy. Anyway, we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Meanwhile, you need to listen to these commercials and because they want you to go out and buy some stuff. And that's economic stimulus, and it's up
things,
to you.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. If you... Probably as close, except for the fact that there are certain people who don't do that. So that means it doesn't always apply. Anyway, as we mentioned, both the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average are setting at record highs. What does that mean? Does that mean the market's overpriced? In fact, it does not mean the market is overpriced. Does that mean that the economy is about to go crash or something? No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of articles in Wall Street Journal, Barron's, a lot of other places, as well as statements from the Fed as they've been speaking around the country, the members of the Federal Reserve Board. They are all confident of a couple of things. One is there's no signs of inflation. Again, as I said earlier, the people who forecast the market was going to crash if President Obama was reelected, which caused, by the way, a lot of people to lose a lot of money because they listened to them, which is unfortunate. And the other thing that was predicted by a lot of people, unfortunately, on radio and television talk shows, and unfortunately, again, almost all of them, at least in my experience, were the people who we consider to be conservatives, that we were going to have runaway inflation. I don't know if you remember Glenn Beck, on and on and on and on and on. And the reason I remember this so well is not because I watched Glenn Beck, but because I got so many emails and telephone calls and had so many appointments with our clients who were desperately concerned that we were going to have, first, runaway inflation, and secondly, a major market crash, neither one of which happened. Again, the key here is to recognize when people have been consistently correct, if they're going to talk about what's likely to happen in the future, and when people have been consistently wrong. And folks, stop listening to the people who are consistently wrong.
Yeah. What this is to kind of balance it out and make you think, make you realize that we don't hate Glenn Beck.
I could, but I don't.
Yeah. that golf analogy. I don't play golf.
What golf analogy?
The one I made at the end when you were over there digging into the computer. I'll make it again. If you're playing the same course your whole life,
mm-hmm.
and you know that course, you know which club to use at which hole, you know which stroke and which direction to face and so on. If you suddenly were taken from that course and put on another course with different winds and different everything, the courses are facing different ways, there's sand traps in places and there's water traps in other places, it's in essence a different place. And you tried to play the same game you've been playing your whole life at the other course, it wouldn't be very effective.
So you play a different game on each course?
You play golf.
Like if you, you need a bowling ball for the second course?
Right. You need a bowling ball or a cricket.
Or
no.
tennis racket.
What we're saying here is that the course can change and the rules of golf don't change. But if you think that all golf is played the way you play it on your course, you're going to wind up making mistakes when you go to other courses. And time changes the courses.
Time changes everything.
Yes. So what I'm saying here is that Glenn Beck was operating off of a very vast amount of experience his whole life, in essence playing the same course, saying if you hit that ball at that angle, it's not going to go to the hole.
I would venture to say that Glenn Beck probably knew.
I doubt it.
The reason I say that is because when he would present data,
mm-hmm.
he would very, very carefully only present half of it.
Well, that's just because most people, when they have something that they believe strongly in, mm-hmm. and they've got all this evidence from their lifetime about it, they're going to show you what their opinion is, and look, this evidence backs it up. I'm not going to show you the stuff that doesn't because I've got my whole life behind me showing me evidence of the other thing.
Maybe the fact that he was advocating buying gold because of the inflation that was going to come.
Could be that he was getting paid a little bit there. Yeah.
No, that he was, but he was in the process of selling rather than buying at that point. Gives me an indication that he really didn't think there was going to be inflation. He just thought he could scare enough people into buying enough gold to make him $23 million a year.
Right.
I don't know that for a fact. I mean, I can't read his mind. I have no intention of casting. I just know that the evidence seems to indicate that during that time period, he was selling gold rather than buying gold while he was advocating people were buying gold. Now, whereas it's something other than a commodity like gold, like stocks, he could go to jail over that.
Yeah.
But he didn't say anything about stocks. Okay, anyway, we have a telephone call on 773-1400. We just got a couple of minutes left in the hour, so make it quick. You're on the air with the personal
Real quick, how does a person know how much they need to retire and feel comfortable? I know that's a complex question and everybody's different, but you can do 30 seconds on that. I appreciate it. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Right. We will probably start the next hour with that one.
Yeah, well, they need enough.
Enough. Yep. Define the word enough.
Enough. Enough is an electronic. Remember talking about electronic
right.
money a moment ago?
Enough is out there, so we've got electronic enough.
It's electronic enough.
We really don't have enough time this hour to talk about it, but we will next hour.
We certainly will go into that in depth next hour.
So we will leave you on a cliffhanger. Oh, it's very
cliff.
Good.
Hanger. Yes. Is that like a fiscal cliff?
Maybe a non-fiscal cliff.
A fiscal cliffhanger.
Yeah, if you would like to contact us off the air, you can reach us at voicemail locally at 947-1111.
Man, you just took
did it.
Or, you know, alternatively, you could like use the 800 number, which is 800-914-PLAN, 800-914-7526. Or you could reach us by email. We actually have email, just like, you know, enough.
Yeah.
And my email address, I think, is jeff at tpwc.com.
And mine is jake at tpwc.com.
Now, you're absolutely sure of that?
I am positive that it is my email address.
That's what the Proton said, too.
We also have a webpage with podcasts, and those podcasts are available at thepersonalwealthcoach.com. So if you haven't got enough of insanity for your weekend, you can go and listen to more.
Again, that's what the proton said. I'm positive.
Till next hour.
KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. The best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.